Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Before we get into today's episode, I gotta tell you about Kettlebell Social. It's here. Kettlebell Social is my newly revamped online strength training program and community for women who like to do hard things but are trying to be more chill in their approach to fitness. It's opening for enrollment September 18th, 2023. So depending on when you're listening to this, you can go to the link in the show notes and either get yourself on the interest list or just sign up and join us. Here's the deal. Your workouts are meant to enhance your life, not consume it. You maybe love to work out, but like you have a whole ass life to live outside of the gym. You're so over using exercise to shrink yourself, and you love feeling like a badass, but you also need it to be fun and flexible and free. And you're ready to start questioning the arbitrary rules around fitness and stop following advice that wasn't meant for you. If this sounds like you, we're your people. Come play inside of Kettlebell Social. You can check out the link in the show notes for more info. Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josefowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game. Call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgments and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Today, I'm super excited to be able to chat with my friend Shori Davidi, who is an unapologetically queer writer and creator. Driven by a passion for equal rights and representation for LGBTQIA folks and people of color, her work supports and celebrates the queer and BIPOC communities of which she's a proud member. Shori is currently working on her first novel, and she is the author of the Substack newsletter, The Queer Agenda. She happily resides in Denver, Colorado, with her fiance, but Texas will always be her home, and she's forever a Texan at heart. And a little backstory about Shori and I is that we talk a lot about on this episode the shifts and changes and evolution of her career, but we originally connected, it must have been at least 5 or 6 years ago at this point, as two of the only Health at Every Size personal trainers in a sea of non-diet dietitians and therapists in a Facebook group that we were in. And so we connected over that and followed each other throughout the years and got to hang out in real life a few times. And it's been really awesome for me to see the evolution and growth of not only her career, but also her life. It is really awesome. And this conversation is one where we make a lot of connections about self-trust, which was the foundation of her coaching for a long time, but how that shows up not only in fitness, but also in the choices that we make in our whole lives, and how we can stop playing by arbitrary rules and do things that are actually meaningful to us. I had so many light bulb moments during this episode, and I know you're going to love it. So let's go ahead and get into the conversation with Shori. Hey, Shori, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you today. And I just have a feeling, knowing the both of us, that this conversation is going to go in a whole bunch of different directions. But immediately when I thought about asking you to come on, I really wanted to dive into all things related to self-trust, but a lot as it relates to the way that we relate to movement and exercise. But before we do that, for those who don't know you, do you want to give us like a quick intro about who you are and what you're up to these days? And I think kind of an update maybe for some of the people. I know a lot of people in my audience know you.
Yeah.
but maybe aren't up to date on all the things.
Yes, my life is in constant motion. So if you miss it, you might not know what's happening. But yeah, so, you know, you and I kind of met originally when I was doing personal training.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy to think now, but it was 6.5 years ago that I first started my business. And I started as personal trainer, and then I kind of moved into doing intuitive eating coaching and got that certification and was doing more like weight inclusive wellness, like looking more holistically with my clients, where it was exercise, yes, but we were also talking about food and we were talking about health and well-being in all the different sectors. Mm-hmm. And for a while I had a podcast, which had two different names, but when it concluded, it was called Conjuring Up Courage. And I did that for 3 years. It was super fun. And then I moved more into what I was calling self-trust coaching. And I know we will get into that. But that was a really fun transition for me because I was really just like getting to find this thread line that had run through all the different coaching I'd been doing for years with people. And I got to work with a lot of queer folks, a lot of marginalized folks who are the people who are most affected with a lack of self-trust.
Yeah.
And helping them to start to develop that and really to live lives that felt more authentic and enjoyable to them. And that was super fun. But you know, as a small business owner, like it's a lot of grind and a lot of hustle. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of factors that are working against you that are outside of your control as far as like how things are going, how things are going financially. It's a lot of like up and down roller coaster of trying to figure things out, new programs, all of that stuff. And after 6.5 years of it, I reached the point where I was like, I don't know if this is for me anymore, because so much of my life had also changed, which I know we will get into.
Yeah.
From when I started coaching to kind of when I decided I wanted to conclude that. And so in February, had made the announcement that I was going to close down my coaching and consulting business as it had been and take a step back and figure out what I wanted to do. And right now what I'm doing is really going in on my career as a writer and a creator and focusing my time on my Substack newsletter, The Queer Agenda, focusing my time on content creation for Instagram and TikTok, and also writing multiple books. There's many projects that are happening. So I've always been a writer. That's something I've done throughout my entire life. I've always loved it. I've always dreamed of writing books. And it's one of those things where it's just like kind of went away from that. And it was always in the back of my mind and now feels like the right time to come back to that and really pursue that. So I'm having fun with it. It's good. I am definitely not at the point where I can like support myself on my writing. And I think that's something that's going to take a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I just moved cross country as well. So my fiance and I moved from Austin, Texas to the Denver, Colorado area. Mm-hmm. And probably like in the next couple of months, I'm going to start looking for some kind of part-time job just to support my work that I'm doing as a writer. But my long-term goal is to get to a point where like that is the main career and how I can support myself. So I moved from one challenging and up in the air kind of career to another because apparently having a, you know, stable, settled life is not for me as the ADHD individual that I am.
Yes. One of the things when I think about this, and I think about the way that we first met, because you and I were what seemed to be like the only two personal trainers in a sea of non-diet dietitians and therapists.
Yeah.
At that time. And that's how we first connected. And I think a lot of people might look at like all of the different things that you've done and see them as like different, like very separate or different things or different chapters. But what I see is this through line of self-trust that has been there all along, from the way that you first started coaching your personal training clients to the way that you incorporated that with their relationship to food, to the way that you took that like broader into like self-trust in the grand scheme of your life, to like trusting yourself in like your sexuality and who you are as a whole human and trusting yourself to make these big career changes. So I'm just seeing it as like one, it's all the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is all the same. And that's how I came to coaching self-trust in the first place. And I actually will give credit to Kelly Deals, because I was working with her as a like marketing and branding coach at the point in time where after I was going to get a divorce and I was like, my life is about to be extremely like unstable and my finances are about to be extremely unstable. And like, I need to figure out what the direction I want to go with my life and my business is. And so I sat down and I worked with her to kind of figure out, well, what is it that I want to do? And what is it that I have been doing? And she was the one who was like, it kind of seems like self-trust is maybe been the theme of the work you've been doing with clients as well as in your own life. Is that, you know, does that feel accurate? Does that feel like the direction you want to go? And I was like, oh my God, yes. Like that is exactly it. That is what all of this boils down to. And then taking the time to build out an educational component to that and figuring out like some pillars of self-trust and using those to work with my clients going forward after that was a really helpful thing to do with her. But it was all extremely intuitive. I think you're right. I think if you don't know me well, or if you just hear those things, it's kind of like, well, how are those connected? And like, how did you make so many changes in your business over time? But I was doing what came natural to me and what felt like the next step. And that's something about me as a person, is I won't stay bogged down in something if I can see a different direction that I want to go in, right? If I'm like, you know, this feels more authentic or better to me or makes more sense for my life, like I'm not afraid to make those changes. And I think that's different from a lot of people, because it's a scary thing to do.
Well, it is a scary thing to do. And I think that also ties into the idea where a lot of times we do certain things in our lives because it's what we've been told that we're supposed to do by society, by our families, by just like whatever the norms are. And it can be really hard, I guess, to like figure out like what your internal voice is saying. So what do you think some of the things that come up like in our life, society, systems that prevent us from trusting our own internal wisdom? I guess what I'm wanting to talk about here is like, what are all the different flavors of this shit sandwich that are keeping us?
So many flavors, just a cornucopia of them to choose from here. So it's everything, honestly. And it's all the like bad, crappy things. So systems of oppression are like the number one, and we are all living in a sea of those that overlap and interplay with each other. So white supremacy is going to play into this. Cis heteronormative society is going to play into this. Late stage capitalism, all of those things are what is laying down the rules and saying, here's what you're allowed to do. Here's who you're allowed to be. Here's your prescribed life path according to what we say is normal, acceptable, allowable for you, whoever you are, right? So if you are a woman, then this is the life path you're supposed to take, where you're gonna, you know, marry a man and you're going to have children, and that is gonna be more important to you than anything to do with your career. And it's just this thing and this thing and this thing. And then you add intersections onto that, you know, if you are a person of color, if you are a fat person, like any of these things, and all of a sudden society is like, here's what you are and are not allowed to do. So I think those are like the big overarching things. And then those break down into smaller pieces because of course we are in relationship, and those are where we get a lot of our rules from growing up. So many people, it's with parents or caregivers or trusted adults who said things to us when we were growing up that just stuck with us, or told us rules that we were like, okay, yeah, I have to do that because this person who I love and trust and respect is telling me like, that's the way to live and that's what I need to do. And then we just keep on going with that. And then as you get older, it's peers and it's a roommate in college who says something to you one time and then it sticks with you forever. It's past relationships, and maybe they weren't good relationships and there was a bad dynamic, but those things have stuck with you as well. So all of that together basically creates this din in your mind of voices that aren't your own, but that you start to believe are your own because it's what you've heard on repeat for so often. And so a lot of that initial work of self-trust is just peeling back the layers of like, do I even believe these things? Is this my own voice? And like, who am I in this? Because it is so hard to separate those out initially.
And I'm having two thoughts initially when you're bringing this up. And the one thing that's coming to mind right away is thinking about what I hear my clients say when it comes from like a fitness perspective, and they can call themselves out on it in the moment where it's like, oh, but like, does it really count if all I have is 10 minutes? And then their own voice is like, of course it counts. But like, I think it can be really hard if you haven't been taught in anything that there can be another way to do it, that that voice might not be your own. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, bodies are like the most policed area for any of us. And again, the more marginalized the body, the more policed that that body has been. And so I think it makes sense that this is something that really comes up in like the fitness and wellness space, because we have so many rules as a society of what you are allowed to do and be with your body, especially for certain populations. Again, women who are really told like, this is what you need to look like, and this is how you need to eat and exercise to achieve whatever that look may be. Those messages start like when we are little tiny toddlers, before we can even remember that we're getting those messages. Like, they are coming into our brains and going on repeat. So it's so difficult to get to a point where you can tell like, oh, these were messages. Like, I didn't just inherently know this. It's not automatically a truth because it's in my brain. And I think that's what's hard, is it's like, we think that, well, it has to be a truth because it's a thought that's coming up inside of my head, but that's not the case, because all of these things are learned. And so getting to that point where you can tell that, and then you also have an alternative message, which is, to your point, not everybody has gotten those alternative messages yet. It's only just now that some of these better alternative messages are becoming more mainstream, to the point where people are like, oh, I don't have to eat that way, and I don't have to be this size or exercise, you know, until I puke, all these different things that people do to maintain their bodies. Like, for a long time, that wasn't considered a reasonable alternative. And in a lot of spaces, it still isn't, as we know.
Yeah.
But it's getting to the point now where I think at least more people are hearing those messages because of social media, because a lot of people are fighting back against these systems and realizing like, we don't have to accept that as the truth.
Right. And it makes me think about like all the boxes that we've all tried to fit ourselves in to one degree or another. And I was just talking to another, I can't remember who I was interviewing and what we were talking about. But I was using the comparison. I'm thinking about my son, JJ, who's two now, like his toys and this little thing he has with like the little shapes and you put them in the holes, and how so many of us, I think, just try to literally fit our square peg into a round hole for our entire lives. And some people can just stay stuck in that place, like trying to jam it in when like you were never round in the first place. And maybe there is like not a way to ever make yourself round. Now I'm getting like really like up in my head about this, but you know what I mean? And if you're having those, you know, marginalizations or, you know, different intersections of things that aren't quite fitting into that societal norm, a lot of that, like, you cannot change no matter how hard you try. But like wellness culture, I can't even say that word. Let's try that again, shall we? Wellness culture would have us believe that if we just do like all of the things hard enough, that like we will be perfect and we will be loved and we will be happy and like everything will fall into place. But in many cases, quite the opposite is true when you're in pursuit of that.
It's definitely the opposite for a lot of situations. And yeah, so when you're talking about, you know, trying to fit a square peg into a round hole with my own life, the first thing that comes to mind is trying to be straight my entire life when actually I'm queer. So I'm trying to fit into the wrong box for literal decades of my life. And for some people, that's a conscious decision because of the world that we live in, where they know that they are queer, they know that they're trans, but because that's not yet an acceptable thing for society or in their families, they have to pretend essentially that they're not and try to fit into that cis straight box. For some of us, like me, we just don't even know at all for a really long time. So my experience was that I just assumed that I was straight because I didn't know that not being straight was an option for someone like me, and spent so much of my life, especially my adult life when I was in relationships with men and married to a man, feeling like I don't know why I'm not feeling completely comfortable and why I don't feel happy or like something is wrong. Like my body was trying to tell me something for a long time, but I didn't have the tools or the information to interpret what that was until like my late 20s. And so that was a really rough experience. And then when I did the work and like figured out that I was queer and changed my life, all of a sudden I was like, okay, now I found a place where I actually fit. And I don't even want to say like, oh, well, now I was, you know, the square peg going into the square hole. I think the great thing about queerness is the expansiveness. So there wasn't anything I was trying to fit myself into anymore. Like it was allowing me to just be who I am and exist in that authenticity without like, oh, I have to be like in this box or in this thing. And to relate that back to like the fitness and wellness sphere, I think there's so many ways to get to that feeling. Don't have to be a queer person necessarily, but if you are someone who, you know, your whole life you've been trying to look like something, and I think I said magazine earlier, which is just like showing my age, nobody's looking at magazines now to be like, what should I look like? I'm pretty sure they're looking at Instagram, but like, yeah, you're looking at Instagram and you're like, I need to look like this fitness person and I'm supposed to be this way, but like that's not your body and that's not the lifestyle that you want to have, and you're feeling miserable, but you're like, why am I so miserable when I've just been trying to do the thing I've been told I'm supposed to? It's through letting go of that stuff and figuring out, well, here's what actually works for me and what I want, that you can exist as well and be like, I can just be me instead of trying to force myself into something that I'm not.
And that just brought me to a couple of mind-blowing conclusions, but like this is the first time I ever made this connection, is in thinking about, and like you've been there, I've been there, we've all been there, where you've been that quote unquote like ideal body type, or you've met your goal weight, or you know, you were wearing that outfit in that size, and you still didn't feel the way that you thought it would make you feel.
Never.
Because it was never about that. That just wasn't meant for you. So I'm seeing this whole connection to all of it. But also, I just got to say, I agree with you 100% in like never even realizing when we were kids that like being queer was an option, or being anything other than straight was an option. And I'm saying this even like when I was growing up, my mom's best friend came out as lesbian, and like I knew that that's what she did, but it was never like it was just never a conversation or a thought of like that's something that I could do or even consider, or like, you know, it really makes you question like, why do I do the things that I do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think especially in our generation and generations before us, like most parents weren't having a conversation with their kids of like, you can love all different kinds of people and there are different genders. Like these are conversations that are really only now coming into the mainstream, and not with all parents, but with a lot more parents are like, oh, we need to explicitly say this. And, you know, when we were growing up also, there weren't examples of like queer couples or families available to us. Like I always make the example of like, if you are in school, you know, you get a million word problems when you're going up K through 12,
right?
And they all feature straight people. Not yes. One of them ever featured a queer person when I was growing up. And you get that everywhere, right? You go to the doctor's office and you fill out the forms and like there's no mention of this, there's no mention of pronouns at this time. And so much of this is thankfully changing, but when you are just living in the sea of cis heteronormativity and compulsory heterosexuality, you can't see that there is another option. A lot of people can't see that there's another option unless it's explicitly shown to them. And that still blows people's minds, like especially the minds of men.
Yeah.
Say horrible things to me on the internet who are just like, how could you not have known? Like, that's bullshit. That's a lie. Like, people can't fathom that possibility. But when you really think about it, I'm like, the systems are in place to make that the case, especially for me, as like, I identify as femme. And so I am more feminine presenting, and I always have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for more femme people, the assumption is always, well, of course you're going to like boys and you're going to be with a man and like that is the future for you. Versus my fiance, Jesse, like she has always been more butch and she identifies as a soft butch. And so she always knew there was like something different about her, and adults knew that too. And so they were more like pushing up against the like, oh, well, you can't be like that, right? Like you're being too much like a boy. You need to dress this. You need to dress that. And she was like, well, I know I don't want to do that, because that was her personal expression.
Yeah.
And so I think it can depend too on just like, if you kind of neatly fit into what society is asking of you, then it's even harder to discover certain things about yourself because you don't have a reason to question it. People aren't pushing back against that. They're just like, oh, here's what you're supposed to do. And you're like, all right, I guess I'm going to go do that. Why would I do anything else?
Yeah. Well, I'm like, you know, when you talk about people making comments to you on the internet about like, how could you not know? But it's like, how could you know when you didn't even have like the language or the knowledge that like this could even be a thing,
right? Like, and some of it's just different to the time, because now so we have so much more language to talk about this. We have so much more understanding. Things are online that like weren't there when I was growing up. Like you really had to search for it. Like a lot of people be like, oh well, like I watched The L Word or like Will and Grace. And so those were like ways that I did see some queer representation. Well, I was definitely not allowed to watch Will and Grace. So my parents watched it and we didn't have the channel that The L Word was on. So I wasn't watching that. So at the time there was such little representation available that unless it was given to you or you know where to go find it, you didn't necessarily have that. You know, we didn't have out lawmakers who were queer or trans. Like this stuff just didn't exist. And I'm really glad that that is changing. And I think it's becoming less likely now that somebody is going to make it into their 30s, 40s, or 50s without ever realizing that they were queer, which thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But I've met so many women who are my age or older who've had this experience. Like it is not an individual phenomenon to me. Like it happened to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I know a lot of people that it has happened to as well. And it, you know, I even think of like the very minimal of amount of representation that there was, you know, for example, like Will and Grace is like one example. And it's like, oh, well, I guess that I'm not queer because I don't act like this person, like this right. one
and it was
singular
white gay men. So it was like also a very specific privileged sect of people who were being represented.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's so interesting, but like it's all related. And so I guess what I'm wondering, to bring it back to the whole like fitness and wellness piece, like how do we reclaim that for ourselves? I mean, we could talk about this in all the ways, but I'm just thinking like in terms of, you know, when it comes to like diet culture and like toxic fitness messages that we've received, how do we like figure out what's really ours and what we really want that to look like for us?
I think the first step for whether it's wellness or fitness or applying this to anywhere else in your life is like the consciousness piece. And when I used to coach self-trust, I had three pillars and the first one was consciousness. And that's because until we know these things, we know that all this stuff exists, we can't really do anything about it. You can't unlearn something that you didn't know you learned in the first place. And so what the exercises I would have clients do were around the unlearning, were around trying to understand like, what are the things that I'm hearing constantly in my head? So I'd ask them to, you know, take a look at that. Like, what is this message you're hearing over and over in relation to, let's say, fitness and wellness? And then once you have that message to like dissect, like, where did this come from? Is this a source that I care about or want to put any stock in? And do I personally believe this to be true? And that can take a lot of different steps, but we can give it like a very specific example. So I had a client who was like, you know, I was always told breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And so she like believed like, okay, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. This is how I'm gonna live my life. This is what I'm gonna do. But not really much of a breakfast person, and was like really struggling and like feeling like I've got to like, you know, have whatever in the morning. So if you think about that, I was like, okay, well, where did you learn that? Like, where did you get the breakfast the most important meal of the day? And she's like, I actually think I just like saw that in a bunch of advertisements. Like I think we all heard that growing
Yeah.
up all the time.
Yeah.
Like that
I'm
was
like,
just
what was it? Like a Kellogg's ad?
probably, yeah, it was probably a freaking breakfast cereal ad.
Yeah.
And so she was like, all right, so probably let's say breakfast cereal ad is where she learned this. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, does that make sense for you? Like, do you want to make your everyday, this is something you have to have every day, right? If you're going to do like the breakfast thing. I was like, do you want an everyday decision to be made by the Kellogg's company or wherever other advertisement you heard this? No, you don't. Okay. So then the next step often for people is like, sometimes people want to research and be like, okay, well, is this even like a true fact, right? Like, is it objectively true that breakfast is the most important meal of the day? You can Google on that. You can look at that and you will discover that like there's nothing magic and special about breakfast. It's a meal. For some
Yeah.
people, it's more important than others. It depends on your life and like your hunger cycles and all of that. And then the kind of next step is, okay, now knowing this information, what do I want to do? Like, do I want to keep living according to this, or do I want to test out other options and figure out what works for me? Because maybe you play around with it and you're actually like, oh, dang, breakfast is really important for me because, you know, I wake up early and I work out. And if I don't eat something, like I feel like garbage. So I actually need to prioritize breakfast. Or maybe you figure out, like in your life, that like when you have breakfast, it doesn't make you feel very good. Like it makes you feel really sick. So you need to have something light and like lunch is more important to you. I don't know. There's a million different directions that that could go in. But the point is, you have to know that the message is there. Unpack that message and then do your own experimentation to figure out like, is that what you want to live according to? Is it true for you? Because there are very few objective truths out there. And I know this is hard for people to understand, but there's like a lot of gray area out there, even though so many of us live in this all or nothing world.
I am nodding so hard
And
right now.
yeah. And so like what we really have to do, and it sucks because it takes time and effort and like, oh, we have to think about this stuff, but it's so worth it because imagine you do this with one thing, breakfast. Great. You figure out what works for you. There's like a million things that you could do this for. Like any of those messages that you're getting in your head constantly, whether it's about like needing to have a clean house or it's about I'm supposed to date men, right? Like there's so many different possibilities that you can just unpack and be like, well, is this true for me? And like, do I want to try something else? And that's how you build the life that feels like authentic and free to you is by taking apart all the things you've been told that you should do, that you have to do, that you're supposed to do, and being like, who said that? And is it even true?
Yes. And this is like a beautiful way to talk about like some of the things that I'm constantly telling clients and just generally saying when I'm talking to people or talking on the internet is number one, like following advice that's not meant for you. And it's so easy to do that by taking, just like a witty one-liner or a 15-second reel or something like that, and taking that advice on as like truth for you. And one of the things that really pisses me off a lot about the wellness space, and to be clear, I actually recorded a whole episode about this. I appreciate science. Like, science is good, and I appreciate people who are giving information where they're actually like looking at the research and figuring out like what is good research and what is just like fake and garbage and quackery and whatever. But at the end of the day, like, we don't all fit neatly into that box of a research experiment. And the other thing I'm always telling my clients is like, you're the expert on your body, you're the expert on your experience. In theory, this is a thing that works for a lot of people, but like, if that's not true for you, then that's not true for you.
And science is not infallible. Like, we
No,
can't look
it's
at that without being like, well, who's doing the research? What privileges do they have? Who's funding the research? And what is their ultimate motive? And,
Yep.
like, especially in fitness and nutrition, for every study you can find that says one thing, you can find another study that says the opposite. And
Yep.
fitness and nutrition, exactly like you said, the thing with studying fitness and nutrition that's so tricky with the science is that so much of it is either done in a lab, which is not accurate to real life experience, or it's self-reported. And with the culture that we have around fitness and nutrition, not only could we expect that people would purposely self-report incorrectly because of judgment and shame and all these other things they might have around what they're eating, what they're doing, but also I don't know about you, but I can barely remember yesterday. Like most of us don't have like an incredible memory around these things. And when you're supposed to be reporting, I ate exactly this, I worked out exactly this, not everybody is doing that accurately. So you really have to take this stuff with a grain of salt. And the science may say one thing and you might be like, but that just doesn't make sense for me or work for me. It can be true that something works for the vast majority of people and still not work for you.
Right. Especially like if you don't like fit that mold in some kind of way, and now you've got me thinking about like ADHD and like neurodivergence and stuff like that, which is a whole nother rabbit hole that we could go down. But just kind of like living and trying to exist in a world that maybe wasn't built with you in mind.
Yes, exactly. Like, I mean, you and I are both ADHD people. Like, we get it. So much of the standard advice for people with ADHD, and this is starting to change, but like for most of my life has basically been like, do your best to fit yourself into the neurotypical world. And it's the same thing for like autistic folks. It's mask yourself and do your best to fit into this world of folks who don't have autism. And that is bullshit. That is going with the status quo of saying this is the normal acceptable way for like a brain and body to work. And so do whatever you can to conform to that so that you can fit into this world. And what is much more affirming and better for all of us neurodivergent folks is to work with the brains that we have.
Yes.
And accept the limitations of the neurotypical world that we are forced to live in, but not try to go against our brains. Like I coached so many folks who were neurodivergent because I am also neurodivergent. So they're like, oh God, someone who understands me.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of helping them to unlearn the messaging of like, you've got to do it this way, and saying, well, what does your brain orient towards? And so how can we go with like what your brain prefers and work with your brain instead of against it? Because it's going to be so much less exhausting to do that.
Yes. And it's so hard, I think, like depending on what kind of family you grew up in. And I think just like where in the world you grew up and what the norms were in that place. And like, even to an extent, like if you were brought up in a certain religion, changing directions or taking a path that other people in your close circle haven't taken can be so hard and so scary. And I think more hard and more scary depending on who you are. How do you help people get out of that?
It is really scary. I just want to put that out there for people. If you're feeling freaked out and scared about making some changes in your life, that you especially know there are people in your life who are going to have feelings about that or not approve of it, that's really scary. We are relational beings and community is really important. And so it's so scary to be like, I might lose somebody or like drastically alter my relationship if I say fuck it to diet culture, or if I come out as queer and, you know, start dating somebody who my parents wouldn't expect me to date. There's a lot of ways that this can play out. But for me, at least, the calculus that I did when I was trying to make decisions like this is, do I want to live my life like for me and for my authentic expression of self? Like, will that feel better to me? Or do I want to tamp that down to make the people around me happy and to keep those relationships? And I think what I really had to consider was, how important is a relationship with somebody who doesn't want to grow with me and see me grow, and who doesn't want to see me flourish as my best self? And you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's one of the scariest parts is like, you know, you don't know if someone is going to completely like disown you in the case of coming out, or if they just like need time to come around. Like, my mom is someone who needed time to come around. Like, I did not know it was going to happen. She was initially very upset when I was like getting a divorce and like coming out as gay and very confused. And our relationship was pretty tumultuous for a little while there, but she got used to the idea. She came around. We still have a relationship. And with other things in life, you know, like when I was really incorporating intuitive eating and speaking out against diet culture, like there were some people that I just like couldn't really talk to anymore because we didn't have a lot in common, or they were trying to make our relationship about those things, about dieting, about talking about weight. And I was like, I'm no longer comfortable with this. I actually want to let this relationship go. And I can accept that what we had was good for what it was at the time. You know, not every relationship is meant to last forever. And that's a hard thing to come around to. But at this point in my life, I am prioritizing relationships with people who want to see me thrive, who want to grow with me, and who aren't like, oh, Shori's changing again. Like, what do we do? Right? Like, my partner is someone that I've chosen because she also goes through a lot of change, and we champion each other in those changes, and we get excited about what each other gets excited about. And like, that's what I'm looking for in relationships and friendships. And I'm limiting relationships with people who can't show up for me in that way, which is not to say everyone has to do that, right? Everyone has to make the decisions for themselves about how they want to handle those relationships. And some people are okay with dimming themselves a little bit around certain people or all the time. But this is another one of those: are you feeling unhappy in these relationships? Are you feeling unfulfilled? Are you feeling like you want something else? And when you have those feelings, that's the sign I need to dig a little deeper and figure out my next move.
Yeah. And that's another one of those things. I think coming back to the idea about the relationships not being meant to last forever, I think society, that's like another norm that we reward, is like sticking with things to the end, whether that's a friendship, a marriage, a job. Like, we're so, I don't know, society praises you so much for having like perfect attendance and like getting all the way to the end of the thing. And it's like, why?
Yeah, society is definitely obsessed with the idea of longevity over like fulfillment and quality. And we can really see this with like our parents' generation, where there were a lot more people who picked one job, did it from the time they graduated college to the time that they retired. And like, that's what you did. Same thing with like marriages. Like, I know people in their like 60s and 70s who are in miserable, loveless marriages, but they're celebrated because they're like, oh, we made it to our 50th anniversary or whatever. And I'm like, the number doesn't matter if you don't consider the context in which this number is occurring.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to spend 50 years with somebody that I don't love. Like, we don't have a good relationship. We fight all the time. Maybe someone's cheating. Like, all these things that people just put up with because they value the length of something. And everybody gets to decide what they want to value on their own. Again, right. I am not here to tell people what to do. If you value length over everything else, that's fine. But for me, I would rather end something and experience like the grief and discomfort that comes with that, because it's not fun, in order to keep growing and to find something that works great for me. If I hadn't done that, I'd still be married to a man. I wouldn't be out. I'd still be a lawyer, and I'd be fucking miserable. And I just don't want to spend this one life that I have being miserable and being in the pot that is too small for me and not feeling okay to grow out of it.
Yes. And you know, when you're talking about all of this, like, you look at those things on paper, being married for a certain amount of time, like being a lawyer, like that's a career choice that's often very like prized. You know what I mean? We look at those things on paper. And I think there are certain fitness things that like, quote unquote, look good on paper. You know what I mean? Like, you ran the marathon or you got the six pack or whatever, but like, a lot of times those things and the process it takes to get into and be in those things does not feel good. And we assume, looking from the outside in, that the people in that 50-year marriage or the person with the six pack must feel amazing or feel the way that we want to feel. But like, at what cost? Like, maybe that ain't
it. Exactly. Whenever people say I ran a marathon, I'm like, at what cost did you run this marathon? There are people I know who love running and like, it makes them happy, and marathoning is great. I know a whole lot of people who force themselves to train for a marathon and were miserable the entire time just to say I ran a marathon. And I'm like, what good is that going to do for you? Like, when you're on your deathbed, you're going to be like, you know what? I'm so glad that I forced myself to run all those miles and I broke a toe so I could get that marathon medal.
Right. Maybe, and it's like, if you're somebody that enjoys the process of that and like the experience and the learning that comes with it, great. But I can't help but think how many of us are just doing the thing to you know, to get the thing, to get the
to
medal.
To get the thing. And
like to get the medal, like the actual
it's
medal.
Prestigious, right? And a lot of it isn't about us and our internal satisfaction, right? Like some people have internal satisfaction from having run a marathon and gone through that process. But there are other people who just want to be able to say, I ran a marathon, because they know how people will respond to that. It's the same thing with like being a lawyer. Like you said, it's a prestigious career. It's hard to become a lawyer. When I was a lawyer, people automatically had a high level of respect for me because of my career path. And it's something I thought about when I left. Like I was like, dang, like it sucks to have put all this work in to become a lawyer and walk away from it. And now, you know, I'm not going to have that same automatic career respect from people. And I was like, it doesn't matter though, because it's not about them. It's not about other people, but we so often live, because this is one of the shoulds for others, because we're told like, we have to do these things that look good and make us like, look like a good person or whatever. And I'm like, there's only a few people in this world I actually really give a fuck about what they think at this point, like in terms of my actual personal decisions. Obviously the things that we do and say matter and are important, but just for my own life choices, like if I was going to run a marathon, it would be because I was really excited about running a marathon and the running and all of that stuff. It wouldn't be so that I can like tell everyone that I ran a marathon for the rest of my life and like take their praise.
Yeah. And so, you know, that kind of leads me to the idea of joy and ease, because that's something that you've been bringing up a bit lately. And I've been thinking about this a lot too, in terms of like being a business owner, and what I want that to look like for me personally. I had an interesting thought this morning, and I don't know what made me pop it, what made this pop into my head. In thinking about like, I think it was Kim Kardashian. Remember when she said that thing and was like, nobody wants to work anymore.
Yes.
And I was thinking about two thoughts that came up simultaneously. And I'm curious what you make of this, like moving into the joy and ease capacity. Like, I don't want to work anymore either. Like when I think about like, do I want to like, no, I don't want to work. I want to do what I did this morning. And watch some trash documentary on Netflix and slowly drink espresso in my bed before I see my first client at like 10 a.m. Like, I don't want to like work in air quotes, but yet I wanted to see that client. And if I could choose, like if I could decide to be like a housewife tomorrow or like a stay-at-home mom, I would not make that choice. I would choose to work. But like not that way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the nobody wants to work anymore thing is really funny. And I saw some great TikToks that basically were like showing articles over like the last like 40, 50 decades showing that this is just like a constant recurring idea that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's interesting the people who are saying that. It's always the people with money who are like, nobody wants to work anymore.
And I'm just like, and it's the people with like shitty, that are just like shitty bosses that are exploiting their workers.
Yeah, that are like exploiting their workers. And I'm just like, how do you think you got all that money? Because the only way you did it was by exploiting somebody. There's no other way to come into that money, or because you had generational wealth because your family has privilege. Like a lot of people do not have that generational wealth in order that they can fall back on. So in general, I just find the whole thing silly. But I'm also like, of course nobody wants to like work in the way that we expect people to work under capitalism, right? Where we expect people to exchange labor for livelihood, and where that is becoming more and more difficult to access, especially depending on who you are, where we have a lot more people in the US who are hungry, who are not making enough money to live on because of inflation, where people can't buy houses anymore, all these things that we're supposed to want as just not an option for people anymore. I always say, I'm like, if I won like the Mega Millions lottery tomorrow, like, of course, I'm not going to like keep trying to work in the way that I have to. If I don't have the Mega Millions lottery, I'm going to go explore art and my passions and go out hiking and do all these things that I love. And I probably would still write because I love writing. And like, there's a very good chance I would still pursue writing books. I wouldn't just give that up completely because that's something that I feel passionate about doing. And that's a kind of work in our society that is not seen as valuable as other kinds of work. Just like you were working with your clients as a personal trainer, right? Like it's not seen as valuable in society to do that compared to a lawyer or executive or like whatever freaking other jobs. And so it is this like weird balance, because I'm the same as you. Like, I wouldn't sit around on my ass per se, but also I would do a lot of sitting around on my ass. Like, I think what having money does, and why winning the lottery would be so great, is it gives you breathing room to like make your own choices. Your survival is no longer required for you to be working to do that. And that is the issue with capitalism, is like your literal survival to be able to get health insurance, to be able to put food on your table, to pay your exorbitant rent is dependent on you working. And that takes all the fun out of it.
Conscious choices, which comes back to like one of your pillars of self-trust. Like, when you have that breathing room, like any amount of space. And I think to bring this full circle, when we're stuck in like a diet culture mindset, and you're just busy like spinning your wheels, counting calories and counting steps and doing all the things, it kind of keeps you stuck in this place where you're not able to be conscious because your brain is just full of going through all of these motions. But when you finally let go of that, like that first piece that I think was maybe, I have to imagine, and you know, we could go back like deep into your history, like the first endpoint for you is letting go of diet culture, you start to realize all of the other possibilities that might be true for you because you have that space in your brain to have that consciousness where you can start to question things.
Yeah. So much of the work that I did with clients was about taking them off of autopilot, because most of us are living large swaths of our lives on autopilot. And this is a biological advantage, right? Our brains want to do this because there's just too many things to think about and do in a day. It's the reason there's like a bunch of billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg out there who are like, I wear the same outfit every day because it's one less thing that I have to think about, because we get decision fatigue if we have to make too many decisions. So our brains want to be on autopilot, but the problem is we let them be on autopilot for things that don't make sense for us. So it's about figuring that out. Like, where are the areas that I'm just doing the thing to do it, or because I was told it's what I was supposed to do, and figuring out, well, what do I actually want to do? Because you can then create a new autopilot, right? Like, when you figure out what is the thing that works for me and you turn that into a habit, that can go on autopilot. You just want to make sure that you're not running on autopilot the things that actually don't work for you. And because it's on autopilot, like you said, you don't have that space. And so you can feel crummy and not know why. Like, there's so much of that. And I'm sure you have these conversations with clients all the time too, where people are like, I feel like crap and like things are not going well, but like, I don't know why. Like, we just have a hard time looking at it because we assume so many pieces of our lives have to be the way that they are.
I am just having mind-blowing connection after mind-blowing connection in this conversation, because you know what I'm thinking about now? I'm thinking about this other thing that I say all the time, which is like, you don't need motivation, you need momentum. Mm-hmm. And when you are trying to say workouts in a way that you're like forcing yourself to do the thing in the specific way that society told you you have to do it, you kind of have to rely on motivation to get there. But when you find something that is, and it doesn't even have to be like joyful, but it can be enjoyable for you, and then you find the ways to work with you, like your brain and like your personal preferences and who you are, to make doing that as easy as possible, then you get momentum, and then it becomes on autopilot, and then it just feels good.
Yeah. And that momentum like can keep existing over time. Like, I think like with all things, we see the momentum as like we build and we build and we build, and it's like this linear, like it has to be this way, but it really doesn't. Like, once you build out a base of what it is that you want to do and like what feels good for you, you have a lot more room to play. So to give a fitness example, I for probably well over a decade, like was on a strict strength training program. Like, it was all programmed out. I cycled through different programs. Like, I was working out. I mean, I used to work out like 6 days a week when I was in law school. And then over time that kind of went down. I started doing trapeze and other stuff. Mm-hmm. But so I was on this like regimented, like I program, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And then like right before the pandemic and over the course of the pandemic, there was a several year period of time where I stopped programming and I was working out like much less regularly and just kind of like as a personal trainer, I have a billion exercises in my brain. So it's easy for me on the fly to just be like, oh, here's what I want to do today. And so I like really kind of reeled that back and was like, I'm just going to give myself some freedom to know that like, I know how to do this. And this is not the season of my life where I'm feeling like I want something really regimented and I need programming. But now for probably the last year, I have been back doing programming for myself, and I do programming for my fiance too, because we have an at-home gym. And so I try to make it that we are not using the same equipment at the same time because the space is small. And like that has felt so good. And like, I've had like a lot of strength coming back and muscle coming back and like these things, because I trusted that I was like, I can come back to this at any time when it feels right for me to return to that. So, you know, someone from afar could look at that and be like, oh, well, you just like completely lost your momentum in the middle there. And you weren't actually like continuing on an upward climb. But that's part of the fantasy of diet culture and all kinds of culture that we have, is that we're just on this constant upward climb to some sort of like ending. And that's not real life. Like, there's a lot more fluctuating and flexibility and allowing for there to be different seasons of our lives.
Same fucking page. I'm thinking about now, as I saw you draw your finger up, I'm thinking about like I talk about this and I'm not the only one, but talking about like that little progress line, how it's not like, and I talk to clients about this a lot too. Like, you don't have to be constantly achieving. You don't have to constantly be working to get stronger or to get better or do more. You're allowed to let it zigzag. And if we normalize that, it's going to feel a lot better. And something that I've been trying to do, because it's the way that I approach like my own strength training, but also try to include options for my clients. So like, I just put in like a new batch of programming, and I might have like a pull option, for example, like pulling exercises. And then I throw in like four exercises in there and I'm like, pick one. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot more, and then like the rep and set ranges and stuff. So what I'm trying to help my clients do, because obviously like they don't have the knowledge that like you do, or, you know, that I do to like be able to program for themselves, there's that opportunity within the structure to be flexible and kind of like ooze out of it a little bit. You know what I mean?
I think that's so important for people to have, because you're right. We have the knowledge to be able to just do that, right? After years and years of strength training, I know how to adjust for myself depending on how I'm feeling in the moment in the gym that day, or if like I accidentally tweak something, or if I have time and I want to take things down. But a lot of folks that you work with, they don't know that they can make those changes unless you tell them, because we're expecting it to be regimented. They're expecting like, if it's on the page, I have to follow this exactly, or Jenna's going to be disappointed in me. And it's like, No,
you don't need permission. And that's another thing that I'm always telling people. I, one of my favorite clients, I actually posted on Instagram about it this week. It was this audio where this guy's like, you know, you can just do stuff, like just make up stuff you want to do and go do it. But she's like, one of my long-term clients, we've been working together for years. And one of my favorite things about her is that when we're in a session, she'll ask me like, hey, what if, could we like do this exercise, but like, could we do it this way instead of that way? And I love that question. And I really wish more people would do this like in all ways. And then I'm sitting there thinking to myself like, okay, well, let's think about it. Okay. So why do we do it this way? What is the intention behind that? And then I can look at it and be like, okay, well, if the intention for doing it this certain way is this, but you don't really care about that particular outcome, and this other way is also like safe and feels good to you, then yes, like why the fuck not? And I just love when she asks me those questions, because it like really gets you thinking about like, oh, why do we always do it that way? Could we do it this way?
Why the fuck not has been like my rallying cry this year. My friend Sarah, she was talking to me about this podcast that she loves, where she was like, yeah, the guy's like, his phrase is like, why not? And I was like, well, if it was me, it would be why the fuck not.
Yes, why
so
the fuck not?
So I've adopted that as, I'm like, one, I'm like, why the fuck not? And also, why not fucking me? Like, when I'm applying for things and I'm doing things, I'm like, why couldn't I be the one to like get this grant or like do this thing? And like, it helps me just like put myself out there to do the stuff, which is what so much of this is about, really, is just like, kind of like put yourself out there in some way to reap some of these rewards, right? It's like, forcing ourselves out of that like comfort space that we trick ourselves into thinking is like a lot happier and comfier than it is. Because yes, for me, like when leaving my marriage, you know, would it have been like more comfortable to stay in the relationship I already knew and the life that I already knew? In some ways, yeah, but like I had outgrown it. So it really wasn't comfortable anymore. Like it felt too tight. It felt uncomfortable. And so it was only from actually leaving that space that I could again expand and feel like, oh, I actually have like room to grow and to breathe. That doesn't mean that it doesn't suck doing those transitions, figuring this stuff out, allowing yourself things that you've never allowed yourself before. Like it is scary. And, you know, back to my pillars, like we'll jump to the third pillar, which was courage, because that's is what is required in order to learn to trust yourself. Is you have to practice courage to do things that maybe you haven't done before, to do things that feel scary and that other people maybe wouldn't make those decisions, but trusting that like this is what you want to do and what's going to work best for you.
Yeah. And I have to imagine that self-trust only compounds once you make that scary decision once and you get through it and you kind of trust yourself to like, number one, come out on the other side of that exact thing again, or something different and similar again, whether that is coming out, whether that is leaving an unhealthy relationship, whether that is making a big career shift, whether that is deciding that you're no longer going to try to like cram yourself into a size like extra small jeans, whether that is like being injured or like dealing with pain and realizing that you can recover and come back to doing things, whether that is like picking up a heavy ass weight and realizing that like you can indeed lift it and finding those edges for yourself. Ah, oh, there's just so many parallels. I'm dying.
Yes. Dying. Growth of self-trust is exponential. You have it exactly right. Like it's just something that builds and builds on itself. Like I was just saying, right? Self-trust is what allowed me to walk away from doing that rigid programming for like literally multiple years and not worry that like I was going to stop exercising altogether and like I would never go back to programming if I wanted to it. Like, no, I trusted. I was like, I have for years, I have done this thing. I have these great habits built. I love exercise. Like I know that there will come a season in my life where like this will adjust and it will become something else. And that's true across the board, like all of the examples that you just gave. Like once you start to trust yourself also in like one area, because usually we're starting in one place, that expands out to the other areas of your life and all the parts of your life. And it gives you that ease and that joy that we were talking about, because decisions become easier. The autopilot is the trusting, right? You default to trusting yourself instead of defaulting to not trusting yourself. And that's such a beautiful thing. And it makes for a life that has more ease and it has more joy, because you don't have to like constantly be questioning or doing the thing where you like ask everybody else, like, should I do this thing? Like, is this the right thing? Going down the internet rabbit holes of like, what is the answer to this? Like, no, because you look inward and you're like, the answer is here. I need to sit with myself. I need to find it. And I need to trust that like I have the information that I need to figure this out.
Ah, so good. So good. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but where can we find you? Tell us all the things.
Of course. So the main place that I am writing right now is my Substack newsletter. It is called The Queer Agenda. Anyone can subscribe to it for free to get the newsletter, which I send out 1 to 2 times per month. You can also pay to subscribe to that if you want to get fun bonus stuff like playlists and queer book reviews that I put out monthly. And it's a great way to support me as a writer. Beyond that, I have tons of content on Instagram and on TikTok. I moonlight as Pastor Shore of Gay Agenda Study.
Online. I love Pastor Shore is my favorite. I am constantly sending Pastor Shore to clients.
Yeah, I love
this
that.
This is terrific.
Pastor Shore was a fun surprise hit. For those who don't know, basically, I started making these skit videos on TikTok and Reels where I pretend that I am a pastor of the Church of Queerness and we have gay agenda study instead of Bible study, where I say all the things that I wish religious texts would say to affirm the queer community. And because so many queer folks have religious trauma, it has been quite popular on the internet. And it's been a really just fun, silly, beautiful thing that I get to do. So yes, you can get all of the Queer Agenda videos and all the other kinds of videos that I do online on my Instagram, my TikTok. I am on Threads because fuck Elon. And all of my stuff is at Shore Davidi, which is just my first name and last name. And then I have a website, shoredavidi.com. Not a lot on there right now, but making space for as my writing stuff continues.
Well, I cannot wait to see what unfolds with all of the writing and everything that you're up to. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was lovely.
So great to talk to you. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. As I mentioned, I will link to all of the ways you can follow along with Shore in the show notes. So go check her out. At the beginning of this episode, I mentioned my new online group strength training program and community, Kettlebell Social. We focus a lot on kettlebell skills in there, but we're definitely not dogmatic about it. We use other equipment too. But if you're wondering if it's for you, it's great for people who have a history of being active and are already in the habit of working out, but want to get more into strength training and specifically kettlebells. If you're curious about level, the first 6 months of the program will give you all the building blocks you need to build a solid foundation in things like swings, cleans, presses, squats, carries, even things like windmills and short complexes. If you don't know what any of that is but are curious, I got you. If you choose to continue after 6 months, you'll be able to join my long-term clients who are doing all sorts of fun and badass shit. Friends, the people who've been with me for a long time, we're doing things like snatches, Turkish get-ups, using double bells, switching hands, bottoms up, and a whole lot more. Playing kettlebells is a super fun way to lift. So if you have previous experience, you can also join in that section. Link is in the show notes to learn more, get on the interest list, and join us. Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.